This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Hundreds of movement leaders, activists, organizers, funders, and journalists gathered in Atlanta, Georgia in June 2023 at A Light, A Line, A Rise, an invitation-only conference on reparations organized by the Decolonizing Wealth Project. As the conference's media partner, Yes Media spoke with more than a dozen prominent organizers, activists, and leaders, among them United States House Representative Jamal Bowman of New York. Congressman Bowman represents New York's 16th District. He was born and raised in New York City, spending his early years in public housing and rent-controlled apartments. He began his career as a crisis intervention teacher in a Bronx public school and has a doctorate in education. In 2009, he founded the Cornerstone Academy for Social Action, a middle school in the Bronx, where he served as principal for a decade before running for public office. He was elected to the House of Representatives after defeating the 16-term incumbent Elliot Engel in the 2020 Democratic primary. Here's my conversation with him from Atlanta. Congressman Jamal Bowman, thank you so much for being with us.
Of course, good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
What does it mean for you to be at this conference, the first of its kind, considering this is an issue that's dear to your heart?
Inspiring, exciting. It's good to be with family and friends who care about this issue so deeply. It's good to see that decolonizing wealth is keeping the issue front and center and at the top of the agenda. These are the kind of issues that are difficult to talk about nationally because so many people have, you know, like strong reactions to it. You know, they believe as we talk about decolonizing wealth, as we talk about reparations, that it's about taking something away from them to give to historically harmed people. And it's not really about that. It's about repairing the harm that we have caused to a certain group of people so that they can be whole and well and uplifted, and so that we all could be whole and well and uplifted. So it's really inspiring to be here, and I'm excited to continue this collaboration beyond just this conference.
What will it take to get legislation like H.R. 40 or the new bill that Representative Bush just introduced? What would it take to get that into reality? And why doesn't President Biden sign an executive order furthering as much as he can this agenda?
Well, the president is scared because, you know, when you look at polling on this issue, public perception is not near 50% as of yet. So he is afraid that if he were to do something like that, there would be incredible backlash towards him and he may not win his reelection, right? So that's the truth of the matter. And I think, number one, I think they're polling the wrong people because if you poll historically marginalized people and the people who do not consistently vote, one of the reasons why they do not vote is because we haven't done anything with regard to reparations and repair historical harm. What it's going to take to get done is voting the right people into office and voting the wrong people out of office. I mean, that's the bottom line, because right now, when you look at Congress, you have a Republican-controlled House. You could forget about touching this issue with them. And even on the Senate side, Democrats have control, but it's a very, very slim majority. And for any legislation to pass there, we need 60 votes because of the filibuster, which is racist and should not be in place in and of itself. But even when Democrats are in control, again, it's an issue in certain districts where, you know, many of my Democratic colleagues aren't, you know, brave enough to talk about it, you know. So there needs to be a consistent national engagement around this issue and conversation and education around this issue so that people can feel more comfortable if they understand exactly what it's about.
When there is polling done on an issue like this, it even if it's not the best kind of polling, it tends to reflect at least something of our culture. Do you feel that the cultural shift is an important part of this and that younger, progressive, newly elected congresspeople of color like yourself are, you know, have that power to push the conversation forward on this issue culturally so that the people can get behind it?
Yes, absolutely. It's incumbent upon us to be the ones to push the issue forward. And again, through an engaging dialogue and education on the issue. You know, many people think also that this is like, you know, reparations for slavery. And that's a big part of it, but it's not just reparations for slavery, it's reparations for the continued harm that happened post-slavery. You know, the political violence that's been inflicted on Black people, the harm that is manifested in the healthcare system, in the housing market, in banking. We see it manifested in wealth inequality and health outcomes and life expectancy and all of it. So yes, it's incumbent upon us to push it, not just young members of Congress or new members of Congress, everyone. It's incumbent upon everyone to push this conversation, because behind all of it or underneath all of it is an implicit bias and unconscious racism that many people practice who do not know that they practice it in their day-to-day lives.
We are at this moment experiencing a very serious backlash to the summer 2020 uprisings and the movement that it has sparked. And yet people of color are on the cusp of becoming a majority in this country, and maybe, you know, within a few years, a decade.
We have some more backlashes.
And so on that issue, getting enough people engaged is critical, right? And also getting the right people into office who have the connection to the grassroots movements. Because it's one thing to have someone like yourself in power, another thing to have someone like Joe Manchin in power, yeah. A completely different thing.
Yeah. No, that's very true. That's very true. And you know, I like how you phrased it as people of color, because there's going to need to be a coalition here. To make sure that we get reparations for a particular group of people. So that is a powerful thing, because for so long, you know, Black people in this country have not felt cared for and loved by America. So to have a coalition of people of color, progressive people, young people, white, you know, Black and everything else, supportive of this policy, it shows that we're a nation of the people, and we care about and love each other. And I think that is just a powerful message, because so often the political system itself doesn't feel like it loves us. We don't feel like it loves us. But if we are really a democracy governed by the people, if the people rise up in a way that we're capable of rising up, then we can make sure we get the right people into that system to make reparations happen from a government standpoint. I also believe that the private sector has a responsibility when it comes to reparations as well.
The private sector needs to be forced into doing the right thing usually, right?
Yeah, I mean, government, yes, can force them by law to do the right thing, and that needs to be a part of this. But I know a lot of the conversation has been about government apologizing and then investing the money to repair the harm, but there are many private corporations that have benefited from slavery as well historically, and they should be held accountable also.
Well, in terms of the you know, the fact that the argument that the backlash will also center on will be, well, we don't have the money, right? Whenever we talk about things like just even basic healthcare, we don't have the money, and when we bring up reparations, that's going to be number one, right?
Yeah.
Money.
Yeah. I mean, if we got the money for wars, we should have money for reparations. I mean, that's pretty much a simple answer. And, you know, the United States government, the federal government, we have a fiat currency. It's not tied to any natural resource like gold. So we can literally spend money into existence, which we always do. So this is another example where we can spend the money into existence. And it's an investment, again, in repairing harm, in giving people boots so they can pull themselves up by their bootstraps, and giving access and opportunity to historically harmed people. So we got the money. I mean, the money's not, it's not real. We could create it. That's why the Federal Reserve exists in the way that it does.
You said that you don't feel the political system doesn't show often enough that it loves black people. What about, how do you feel in Congress now as part of a sort of growing cohort of like-minded folks? And is that the space where you, given enough support, can feel like you can push your party in the direction that it needs to go to live up to its own stated ideals?
Yes. And it needs to also come from the outside. There needs to be outside push. So, you know, myself and many recently elected members, we will organize and make noise on the inside. But if Josh Gottheimer isn't hearing from his constituents, he has no reason to move on this issue. So it's important for every member of the House and every member of the Senate to hear from their constituents on this issue and to be pushed by their constituents to support reparations for black people, or they will be voted out of office. That's it. And so when you look at many of those districts, the key issue is low voter turnout. If you can organize and build a grassroots movement in these districts and increase voter turnout, you can elect these people out of office. So that has to be the mindset. It's an inside strategy and an outside strategy to make sure that we get what we want.
If you could wave a magic wand and have one action item realized that would get you closer to reparations, what would it be?
I mean, it's not a magic wand. It's call your member of Congress, meet with them constantly, individually and with your group.
So more engaged citizenry would be what you would wish for?
Yeah, right. So that's not even the magic wand. That's something that people are doing every day. But also, like, build coalitions within your community around this issue and other issues. The majority of Americans feel beaten down by the system. And I'm saying that because not just wealth inequality, but when you look at affordability, wages, lack of investments, lack of money to invest, when you look at all of the issues related to quality of life, the majority of Americans are struggling, so they're tired. And so what gives us hope and energy and strength is when we connect with one another. So we need to build toolkits to support grassroots organizing and grassroots movement building in each community, like mutual aid networks for political empowerment. If we do that, now when you call Josh Gottheimer or whomever, you're doing it with numbers that can get that person out of office. So it's not even a magic wand. It can happen. I think it will happen within the next decade.
How do we build the connection between the need for reparations and what you were saying earlier, the systemic racism we see in this country? People might see things like police violence and reparations as separate issues, or housing, the housing crisis and the unaffordability of housing and reparations. They may not see the connections between the two.
Yeah, well, education is key, right? So homicide is the number one killer of black boys in America, right? And you got a rise in suicide among black girls, right? That's happening very, very, very quickly. And so when you study why that's happening and who is vulnerable, it's usually children and people who endure complex traumas and have endured complex traumas over multiple generations, because trauma is intergenerational. And that trauma that is intergenerational has its roots in policy harm that was facilitated by the United States, which is why we need to repair that harm. So from slavery to Jim Crow, to the black laws, to the KKK, include the Homestead Act, include the GI Bill, include redlining, include crack cocaine and the Iran-Contra scandal, include underfunded schools, lack of green space, include globalization, where jobs went overseas for low race to the bottom in terms of worker and low wages. And when those jobs went overseas, police were brought into our communities to keep us in line. And so it's all interconnected, you know, police brutality, mass incarceration disproportionately impacts Black people. So, but it starts with the political harm, policy harm that came from Washington, and it manifests as complex trauma, and then we see these horrible outcomes on the back end.
Finally, looking to the future, what would you like to see happening in Congress in terms of your agenda, reparations and...
reparations and housing as a human right, healthcare as a human right, education as a human right, end to the forever wars. We could start there, I guess. Those areas.
When you say something is a human right, does that mean government provides it, or that we rely on the market? Because that tends to be the fundamental question, and then you get accused of being a socialist, quote unquote, as if that's a dirty word, etc.
I mean, we pay taxes, so those are that's our tax dollar. So we want our tax dollars to go towards universal health care. We want our tax dollars to go towards affordable housing. We want our tax dollars to go towards publicly controlled utilities. We want our tax dollars to go towards free education. We want our tax dollars to go towards dealing with climate change. It's our tax money. It's not free. Like, we pay taxes. Like, when they go to the store, they tax you. That's tax. When you have a job, they take out taxes. These are taxes.
Except if you're a big corporation.
Except if you're a big corporation or wealthy, individual who know how to hide your billions overseas. But, you know, it's not free. It's not free, so.
So it's a simple calculation.
Yeah, it's a simple calculation, right? And so, you know, but to our original points and our original conversation, you have many members of Congress who are more responsive to corporations than their constituents. So they are going to fight against a corporate tax. They're going to fight against a progressive tax for the wealthy. They're okay with Warren Buffett's secretary having the same tax rate or higher tax rate than Warren Buffett. They're okay with that. So, and this is Democrat and Republican. So, you know, so that is part of this conversation as well. Like, we're not even having honest conversations about the inhumanity in our financial and economic system. And we need to have those conversations. And that's why we're here.
Thank you so much, Congressman Bowman. Really appreciate your time.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
I've been speaking with Congressman Jamal Bowman of New York during a recent conference on reparations in Atlanta, Georgia, produced for Yes Media, where I work as an editor. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access these and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.